You're listening to the Chasing Tales Outdoor Podcast, where when you can't be in the outdoors, we bring it to you.
What's going on, everybody, and welcome back to the Chasing Tales Outdoor Podcast. I'm Chase. I'm going to be your host for this episode. I'm super excited for this episode. I get on the line with my good buddy, Brett Mashburn. We discuss our Missouri trip. On a previous episode, I talked with Brandon. Brandon and I hunted together the whole time, so I figured I would just get Brett on. Brett was able to find some success in Missouri. We discussed some of the challenges that we had and just the overall experience. I'm going to try to keep this intro short for you guys. This is a longer episode, so if you get a chance, check out Spartan Forge, check out Scree Gear, and check out our Patreon. Brett even discusses at the end of this episode how cool it was to interact with the Patreon members on our Marco Polo group after he had shot that buck. You'll get to hear the story. And I think that if you're looking for a hunting community and you're looking for like-minded hunters, this is the group for you. We have a $5 tier that gets you in our Discord group, and we have a $10 tier that gets you on the Marco Polo. So with that being said, let's go ahead and dive right into the episode. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Chasing Tales Outdoor Podcast. On today's episode, I have a sure enough killer on this episode, Mr. Brett Mashburn. Brett and I both spent a good amount of time in Missouri during the rut. We're going to kind of discuss what we saw. This was Brett's third trip to Missouri, my first trip to Missouri. We're hunting the same piece of public. And at the end of Brett's trip, he has a super exciting story to share with everybody. So, Brett, before we get started, I'm pretty sure that most everybody knows who you are. You've been on the podcast multiple times now. But why don't you give everybody just a quick little rundown about yourself before we get started?
Yeah, so like Chase said, I'm Brett. I'm from South Alabama, very close to the Florida-Georgia line. And I started out just hunting private land, and I've been hunting public land for about 13 going on 14 years now. And I've just hunted in South Alabama all my life until recently I started going out of town. Our out-of-state trip to Missouri, and me and Chase, Chase decided to come up with me this year, and we had a blast, I think.
Yeah, we did have a good time. It was a new experience for me because I've never hunted Missouri. I have hunted the Midwest, but never Missouri. I hunted Kansas, which it really, as the crow flies, it's not really too far from where we were at in Missouri, but definitely looks different than what Kansas did. Before our trip, because like I said, this is your third trip up there, Brandon and I got on the podcast. We talked about our couple of day scouting adventure in Missouri that we went on. So we knew a little bit about the piece of public before we got there. It was a long drive from Florida to get there. You were already hunting. You started hunting on the 1st. We left on the 31st at night. So we got there somewhere around, I think around 2 o'clock, Missouri, 2 or 3 o'clock Missouri time. To get a little bit of scouting in that first day, and you were actually getting down when we got there.
Yeah.
You had been hunting that day. From what I remember, I don't know that you saw a whole lot the first day. Did you see very much the first day?
No, I think I seen 3 deer that first day, and I don't remember. It was sometime around lunch. There was like some misty rain that come through and some higher winds, and I hadn't hunted in cold weather at all this year, being here in Alabama. It was pretty cold that day, and that wind started blowing and hit me in the back for about an hour of mist and rain just blowing on my back. And then it would, like, go away and come back and start raining again. And after a while, I just got so cold, I could not stand it. I had to just go ahead and get out the tree. It was probably around 2:30, maybe 3 o'clock, and I think I met y'all at the parking lot right before y'all went out scouting.
Yes, that's right. You met us at the parking lot. I said that you were hanging it up for the day.
Yes.
And the funny part was, is I think it quit raining about that time. Like, you had gotten down, but the walk was so far back in there, you're just like, I ain't doing that again. Going back in there and coming back out for the few hours. And I think it was, I mean, I believe it was a good call based on the rest of the trip as far as like how the afternoon hunts went.
Yeah, I believe so. And I think you and Brandon did some scouting and I did some riding around the outskirts of this public, checking out parking lots too, to try to maybe to help y'all know where people were in hunting and stuff out. And also for me, because I hadn't been to around this whole piece of public, I've kind of just stuck to one area and just been kind of breaking that down and hunting it. So I kind of got out, rode around a little bit, and looked for deer just crossing the road and people parked and stuff like that. And then, yeah, I hung it up and went on back to my brother's.
Right. Yeah, you had a good, lot bigger drive than we did every day. Brandon, yep. And I, back when we decided that we were going to go, I started looking at Airbnbs in that area, and I found one that was within, I think it was about between 15 and 20 minutes from the piece of public we were hunting. And it was just a room. I mean, we stayed in, basically we're staying in somebody's basement is what it boiled down to. But I mean, it was a little over $30 a day. So you can't really beat that. I mean, we had a little kitchen, we had a bathroom, bedroom. The biggest risk was their little, yard dogs or dogs that they had yapping at our feet every time that we went in the house. There was one that was a little protective. She nipped at my legs a couple of times, but I mean, she never bit me or anything. But that first day when we pulled up, I mean, they sounded violent when we got to the house. So we're texting the lady, hey, are these dogs? Is it safe to go inside with these dogs? Because they were out. And she's like, oh, they're fine, which they were. They had a bunch of dogs, but yeah, so we had already had that lined up for the trip, and we ended up scouting the rest of that day. We'd scouted this one area along a creek that first day, and then we did some driving. I think we were just basically trying to get a gauge for what the pressure was on that piece of public as far as how many vehicles were parked at each parking area. And I was kind of surprised that there was not as many as I thought there would be.
And that's funny, because I thought there was more people there than what there usually is.
Right.
And maybe it's because I hadn't rode around as much, but it did seem like we've seen a lot of out-of-state people, and they were kind of hunting during the week. Seemed like they were more or less sticking to the same areas for the most part. But yeah. When that weekend hit, it was a different story.
Well, yeah. Well, there was definitely certain areas of it that had more people on it. There were some areas that the parking areas, there was zero trucks almost every day we went by. And then other areas would have multiple vehicles in it. But you're right, there were, as far as driving around some, there were some Louisiana, some Mississippi, a lot of those southern states that were up there. And we actually spoke to a couple of guys that were from Mississippi, and that was their first year on this piece of public. They said that they had been traveling to Missouri, I think the last 3 or 4 years, hitting a new piece of public every year. But they said that they were probably going to come back to that piece of public again next year.
Well, were any of them successful?
They were not. Those guys were not successful. They had some encounters where they were at, but they didn't end up taking a deer where they were hunting. And I think they had stuck it out in one area for most of the week, but that's when, kind of towards the end of the week, they had made a move kind of closer to where you were hunting at. by the end of the week.
Yeah.
But they were seeing, according to them, they were seeing plenty of does. And I think they kept saying that they were seeing the same three or four bucks like every day in that area that they were hunting. And one of them they considered an actual shooter.
Yeah. That sounds about like my experience this time.
Right. But like you mentioned, the weekend, it seemed like a lot of the locals came out for the weekend.
I had the woodwork.
It was also apparently duck season at the same time.
Well, I think the duck season didn't come in until that weekend.
Right. Yeah. On the weekend.
I think that's when it started.
Right. Yeah, that pretty much about the time we were leaving.
Yeah.
At least Brandon and I, about the time we left, that's when the duck hunters kind of came out of the woodworks, it seemed like. But yeah, there was definitely a lot more people in the parking lot that last Saturday that we were there. It was
The last day y'all hunted.
It was nothing like that. But before we went out there, Brandon had spoken to the biologist that was over the property, and we actually met him that Saturday. We actually met him that Saturday. He pulled up as we were finishing up the hunt for that day, and he made it sound like there was going to be way more people out there than there actually was.
Well, of course, he hunts that property as well, so
right.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that's part of it. He was kind of trying to sway us maybe to a couple of different pieces of public. But it was nothing like he described, at least during the week. Now, maybe the weekend, it could have possibly have been like that, because that parking lot that we were in that last day had, what, five or six different vehicles in it?
Yeah, I think there were six of us, and that's including my vehicle and yours.
Right. And before that, you weren't really having any competition over there, maybe one other vehicle?
Yeah, so apparently, so that Saturday that you left, you know, we met the older gentleman and then the younger gentleman that were locals.
Right.
And apparently the older gentleman said that he thought that I was dead, or that he needed to call a game warden or somebody, because he said every morning he got there, my truck was there. Every day that he left, my truck was there. When he come back the next day, my truck was still there.
Right.
And when he left from hunting, it was still there. And this went on for 3 days. And it's just because I was getting in there earlier than everybody else, and I was doing all day sits.
Right.
And I was basically leaving after he was. So to him, it looked like my truck had never left, because I parked in the same spot every time.
Right. Well, that's a good point you kind of made, is the all day sit during the rut.
Yep.
This was on this trip. This was the first time that I had ever really done all day sits. Normally I would hunt till, I don't know, almost noontime probably during a rut hunt. And generally the action would die down, get down, go eat some lunch, maybe do some scouting or something, and then be back in the tree by 2:30, 3 o'clock. But on this trip, you had talked about doing all day sits, so
it paid off, you know, the years prior, like especially the first year,
right?
You know, I seen a lot of deer. I mean, most of the nice bucks that I seen the first year I went up there was between 11 and 2 o'clock,
right?
Which wasn't the case this year at all.
Yeah, definitely wasn't the case. I think during the trip, Brandon and I, because Brandon, he actually sat with me. He had the camera, and he actually sat in the tree with me every hunt. And I think we ended up doing at least three all-day sits. And it always seemed like there would be action until about 11 o'clock, 11:30, and then it would just flat die until about 45 minutes before dark on those three all-day sits we did. We never saw a deer between at least noon and 5 p.m. on any of the all-day sits that we did. I don't know if you had the same. I know you weren't seeing nowhere near as many deer for sure during the all-day sits.
It seemed like the basically from daylight, from the break of day, like the first shooting light till about 10 o'clock or so, there was pretty good movements, and the morning seemed to be the best. And in the afternoon, it was probably the last hour to hour and a half, mainly that last hour and right there around sunset. That's when I seen most of the movement. But there were a couple of days that I seen really, really good movement. There was 2 days, and both days it was frosted. It was the two coldest days when we were up there. I think it was a Wednesday and a Thursday,
right?
Something like that. And I, one day I think I seen it was 18 deer in an all day sit, and then the other one I seen 24 deer in an all day sit. But by far that was the most. Other times it was more like only seeing like anywhere from 6 to maybe 9 at the most.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we had one day where we saw a buck that it was around noontime, and he was out. He was feeding, actually. It looked like he was feeding on acorns pretty hard. It wasn't an older buck or a bigger buck or anything. It's probably a 2.5 year old there. It may have been, or a stud 1.5 year old. four there. I think he was a 7 point. But other than that, like it was, it, to me, it seemed like some of the areas that we were in that we, I would have thought there would have been some maybe midday or mid-afternoon cruising going on, especially being on the like downwind side of bedding and things like that. But just never really panned out that way. And as far as rutting activity, you definitely saw way more rutting activity than I did. I actually never saw a buck chasing a doe or nose on the ground or anything. All the bucks I saw were alone and just kind of doing what they would normally do.
And the crazy thing is I think it was that last day, that Saturday was really the last day for you and Brandon was the day I seen like an actual buck, like all out chasing a doe, like 4 foot behind her, just on her tail, just running her. Right. You know, it was the only one I seen, and it was that Saturday morning when we wasn't, you know, that far apart that day.
Yeah.
And they ended up running right underneath my tree.
Right. Yeah, I remember you saying that you had a buck chasing a doe, and you had drawn back on them. You didn't really know what it was for sure, yeah. But you were just ready. Sure
I wasn't even sure if I was going to shoot it, but I was going to be ready if I could get him to stop, and he was something I wanted to shoot.
Right. Yeah, that was the one thing that kind of the only really thing that kind of blew my mind while we were there, because we hunted from, we didn't really hunt the first. So we hunted like the second, third, fourth, fifth. So 5 days. We basically hunted 5 days while we were there. And the weather was good the entire time. Like the weather, what I call good, I mean, it was in 30 to that 50 range for the most part until the last day when it heated up. It was warmer then. Whenever we left, but for all the other days, I thought the weather was perfect.
Yeah, the weather was good. It was just so slow compared to the 2 years before. And come to find out, they didn't really have any hard freezes. They didn't have any snow or any kind of real cold weather before we got up there. And I think the weather we seen while we were up there was the coldest that they had had.
Right.
Especially for October and November. And usually they have at least 2 good cold fronts that come through before the 1st of November, and which also helps knock some of them leaves off the trees, which were not off the trees when we went.
Right.
The bedding area that I was hunting was still green when it's usually a golden brown.
Yeah, and I think I remember, like, on that last day, one of the local guys had even made a comment that it looked like it was still September.
Yep.
He's like, yeah. He goes, man, it's still up here. It still looks like it's September. And I was like, yeah. I said, when we were up here in September, I mean, I was telling Brandon, I'm like, hey, it's going to look a lot different when we get here. I was like, oh, a lot of these leaves are all going to be gone. And lo and behold, we get there, and I'm like, well, I guess I told you a fib, Brandon, because there's still quite a few leaves, because there were certain areas that I felt like that we were set up that had the leaves not been on the trees, we would have been able to see a lot further.
Yep.
Like, we would have been able to see to that next opening or that block of CRP or field or whatever. Like, I was like, if we were sitting here and all the leaves were off like they're supposed to be, we would have been able to see out a lot further in some of those areas. And even when we were sitting on the edge of, like, maybe a creek or something like that, I felt like we should have been able to see a lot further in than what we actually could see just because of all the leaves that were still on the trees.
Yep. Normally, I haven't seen a lot of cruising next to some of them creeks and all.
Right.
And I end up having to spend a lot of my time up there by that creek because of the wind. You know, the wind the first 2 days was out of the north, and it shifted to a south wind the whole rest of the week.
Right.
I mean, it was just a south wind the rest of the week, and which is not normal for over there.
No.
And so I kind of had to change up, and I was sitting on that creek, which I've had really good luck with seeing a lot of deer and seeing a lot of bucks cruising that creek, and that just wasn't the case this time.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it just seems like it could have just been an off year, or maybe they were just behind a week or so.
Yeah, I think they're normal. Just behind.
Right. The only way to really know that is if we had somebody up there and we were getting a report like, oh, they're going nuts up here. But I know as you left, it was like a warm front came through. That's kind of why, I mean, Brandon had a plane that he had to get back on. So that's the reason why we left when we did.
Right.
If he didn't have to get on that plane, then I would have stuck it out for a couple of more days. Cause I still had plenty of time off from work. But we had to, I mean, we even looked into maybe him flying from Kansas City to where he needed to go, but it was just too much money, at that point, trying to get like a last minute flight or whatever, because I was off for like another 6 days after I got back, from that trip. But you were getting to the point where you were about ready to come back home because a lot of your bucks down here were rutting. And yep. The action just wasn't what we thought it would be up in Missouri.
Yeah, it was going to be hotter in Missouri than it was going to be back home.
Right.
And we had already seen the movement was so slow, and we had some really good weather. You know, we had the highs and only like 46 degrees for 2 or 3 days straight.
Right.
And then it was just going to get hotter. So in my mind, that movement was just going to get even slower.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was good. I mean, it was in like the high 60s or somewhere around there, or low 70s, I think is what it was projected to get to.
And the low is only around 55, 56.
Right. We didn't even hunt that last evening. We had kind of planned maybe we were going to hunt that last evening, but after seeing the movement for like the previous 4 days of really nothing in the evening time till maybe the last 45 minutes. And that was when the weather was good. That was when it was cool out or colder.
And you know, in that same day, that Saturday, it's when all the duck hunters come in there, and they just absolutely blew out that bedding area.
Right.
And I was hunting around, and I think they ran a bunch of deer over by y'all.
Yeah.
And you know, like that morning, I just absolutely didn't hardly see anything. I seen them two deer come running behind me, and I think I seen a doe or something cross the creek.
Right.
And that was all I seen that Saturday. And that Saturday morning, it was actually pretty cold. I think it was like,
yeah, it was cold that morning.
It was like 36 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And That was the last cold morning. After that, it was going to be, you know, high 40s and then getting to the mid 50s in the morning.
Right. Yeah, that last morning when we were set up and then we could hear people, we could hear like kind of like this group coming in. We're texting back and forth. We're like, God, they're being loud. Like,
yeah, I can see them.
Yeah.
I can at least see all their headlamps.
Yeah. And then at one point, it almost sounded like one of them was trying to go up a tree and we were just like, holy cow. I mean, you could just hear them for forever. And then they were talking back and forth.
And hollering.
Yeah, we're like, what is going on here? I was like, there's no way that they're hunting back in here. And about, what was it, like 45 minutes before daylight, you could just hear, quack, 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 quack. And I was like,
yeah,
oh, no.
The
yeah, they started blowing the duck call, and I'm like, oh. But, I mean, they did kick some deer our way, but the deer that they kicked our way, it was still like 30
minutes.
It was
an hour before shooting light.
Yeah, it was still almost an hour before shooting light. I could hear them. I could hear deer walking underneath us by the creek, but you couldn't see them whatsoever. And we had seen, I mean, we did actually have some bucks come out from a different direction, and like they actually headed towards where the duck hunters were, which I thought was hysterical.
Y'all actually seen a couple of bucks.
Right.
That last morning, and I think there was even a deer, I think you said you may could have shot.
Yeah, yeah, there was a buck that I definitely could have shot. He crossed. He took that path that I thought the deer would be using. And I think he was around 40 yards. But he was, I mean, he was a younger deer, 7 point, like an 80 or something, 90 inch deer that, as far back as we were in, I was like, nah, it ain't happening. And there was another buck before him. He was an 8 point. He was probably pushing, you know, that 100-inch range or so. I just wasn't – I mean, he was actually headed a different way, and we just gave him one soft grunt. And he kind of came – he moved our direction, but he never looked like he was aggressive or anything. It was just like he heard it, and he was just trying to maybe investigate a little bit to see what it was. And then when I saw him better, cause he kind of came out like right at daylight within like the first 5 minutes of legal shooting light. Mm-hmm. And I was telling Brown, I was like, hey, let's just give him a soft grunt, see what he does so I can see him a little bit better. And he came within like 70 yards, and just kind of went cruising on by. I don't know if we'd have messed with him a little bit more. He might've came closer. I don't know.
Was that the biggest buck you seen on the trip?
It was between him and a 10-point that we saw, I think, on the second morning. There was a 10-point that we saw. He was a younger deer. He just had good genetics, I believe. That was a deer that we had seen like at 11 o'clock in the morning. And he was just out crossing and going back to bedding. All he was doing. Him and another buck. There was another smaller buck with him. They kind of acted like they were wanting to spar a little bit, but the other buck was so much smaller than him. Like, they didn't really do anything. Like, they put their heads down for a second or whatever, but, I mean, the other buck, it was like a 4-point, so nothing really happened, and they both kind of went across.
Was that the same deer that you and Brandon thought y'all seen cross the road in that same area one morning?
Yes, yeah. It was an evening. We were leaving one evening and we saw a couple of bucks. Like, I saw several bucks that almost like they were together, and they were leaving out of that bedding area, crossing the road to go to like a soybean field that was across the road. And we saw the 4-point for sure. And there was another just racked buck that we could see out in front of him, like 60, 70 yards. As we were driving by, and it was kind of the same exact area where they crossed the road, where they went into that thick bedding area.
Same bedding area.
Yeah. The biggest buck I saw was that first evening there when we were scouting. There was a buck out in a soybean field, and he was like coming around, just kind of, it looked like he was just trying to check on some does. Like, he wasn't with a doe or anything, and looked like he had seen a couple of does and was headed their way. But when we stopped the vehicle, he kind of just like looked around, and then he kind of booked it back towards the corner of the field. But that was probably the biggest buck I saw. And we did that next – that next day is we tried to kind of make a play on him that next day. And we and that was the funny part was that was the only day we actually had another hunter walk up on us. We went back in this area. We found a good – well, we thought we had found a good area. As soon as we got set up, we had seen a buck for the most part because we kind of – we didn't know anything about that area, so we waited kind of till daylight before we went in there. And it was a pretty good little walk back in there. And we just wanted to kind of scout that area a little bit before setting up. And we set up in this area that – I mean, it had – beat down some beat down trails. It had scrapes. It had rubs, all that good stuff. And like I said, as soon as we were set up in the tree, it was like 5 minutes. We had seen a buck. There was a buck on us for the most part. And he was just feeding heavy on acorns in that area. And we sat there after that. And like I said, it was at dead time, kind of from the middle of the day on, where about 3 o'clock, Brandon kind of says, "Hey, there's a guy walking our way." And I'm like, "What?" Like from the direction he was walking from made zero sense, in my opinion, because I feel like he walked through bedding to get to where he was, and he could have easily have walked the way that we came in and wouldn't have disrupted anything, especially in the evening time. He was basically walking where all the deer would have came from to get to that soybean field. at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and he saw us. It looked like he was headed right to where we were at, type thing. Because when he saw us, he kind of like, you could tell he like dropped his shoulders and was like, "Oh man, I made all this walk back here, and there's already somebody here."
Yeah, and I think we looked, and like the closest other parking area was a long ways away through woods.
Yeah, yeah, it made no
long way.
Sense to me at all on why he came the way he did. But he, I mean, he was nice. He went around us and looked like he went somewhere else and probably set up, for the evening. And we did, and we saw some deer that evening, but they didn't come from there. Like they came from somewhere totally different. We didn't see them till they actually made it out into the field. It was, one of them was a buck. The other one, I couldn't tell what it was. We never saw, I would say we never saw a ton of deer every sit. Kind of like you did. Like, we never had any days where we saw 20 deer or anything like that. But we never had a sit where we didn't see a buck. And we saw does. Like, every sit we had, we saw deer. We just – I just never saw the deer that I was going up there to hunt. Yeah. So, I mean, there's definitely a lot of deer on that property, for sure, like you mentioned. It's definitely got deer. There's definitely a lot of younger. There's definitely the buck to doe ratio seems from what I saw was great to me, but I just never saw like a, I don't even think I saw a 3.5. I never saw a 3.5 year old or more the entire trip. It was all like 2.5 year olds and younger.
Yeah. I think it was the second morning. So I started hunting on a Monday while y'all were still on the way up. I think that Tuesday morning, after I figured out how to get in that tree that I got in Monday morning, because the water, I got like water down in my boot trying to get into the tree. Oh, it was some kind of shenanigans. So when I got out after it got cold to meet y'all at the parking lot, I kind of made a better trail and I found some like dead limbs and put out in the water so I had something to walk on.
Right.
The water was so deep it was going over my boots, but. So the next morning I was able to get in there quiet, and I think it was right as you could actually start to see, probably a few minutes before shooting light, and I see a buck out. I'm actually hunting the edge of an ag field in a big bedding area, and there's a buck out here on this field, probably on like 70 yards from me, and I get looking. I was like, you know, it's a pretty good buck. He looks to be probably a 3.5 year old. And he's a 7 point, and the field actually was standing corn, and usually it's always been cut.
Right.
So I had that standing cornfield, and I'm sitting there looking. It was a little harder to see deer, but that cornfield was still kind of a puny cornfield. You could basically see through it, but there were some areas in it that were thick. And I noticed he was out there with a doe. He was just hanging, following that doe everywhere she went. And I watched him for probably an hour just cruising around. I gave him a few grunts, and he would look, but he was not leaving that doe.
Right.
And I watched him for a while, and they ended up walking right by another tree that I could hunt in. But I watched them, and I seen a few deer that second day. It still wasn't a ton of deer, but I seen a few deer and you know, a few bucks. And that 7-point was, at that time on that second day, was the biggest deer biggest buck that I seen. And he would have been on the edge of me shooting him that early. You know, I mean, he was a good deer, but he wasn't, you know, really big deer. He was probably around 120 inches or so. And anyways, I'd seen that buck. That was the second day. And then as I was sitting there all day, the farmers had drove in there and brought basically the head of a combine to cut corn on a trailer and had dropped it off out there. So I'm sitting there, I was like, well, sounds like they're, you know, going to be combining this field tomorrow because they brought equipment out there and dropped it off by the field. You know, so that next day I actually moved off of that field and went to another spot, basically just bedding area I'm hunting. It's like a near about 400 acre bedding area, and just a big old grown up CRP field with random trees growing in it, small bushy trees and cedar trees. And anyways, I waited on them farmers to cut that daggone field the whole time I was there.
Right.
And they never got done cutting or doing what they were doing. I think they ended up having like 2 combines, 3 tractors, 18 wheeler, 4 trailers, 3 pickup trucks. I mean, they had stuff everywhere, and they were the slowest I've ever seen. I mean, like, they basically kept me from hunting the area I really wanted to hunt. You know, I was hoping they'd get in there, cut this cornfield. I could jump in there the next day, and I'm going to have deer just piling in there because they cut it.
Right.
But that was never the case. So it was kind of, I had to pull an audible. And so that was interesting. I was kind of dealing with that the whole time y'all were jumping around and looking for deer.
Yeah. One of the factors that I found while we were there that it made it more difficult is just finding a tree to get in some of the areas, especially for 2 people.
For two people.
Like, for one, there were trees that I could kind of look at and go, yeah, I probably could get in that tree.
And then could make it work if you had.
I could make it work if it was by myself, but 2 people, definitely not getting in a tree, some of those trees. And we ran into that quite a bit. Just finding a tree to get 2 people in, and then in some of the areas it was just like we just had to write the whole area off just because there was like, well, there's just no tree to get in, like even just with the amount of limbs that were on the tree or whatever. And heck,
a lot of leaning trees.
Yeah, a lot of leaning trees, a lot of them that had limbs just kind of everywhere coming off of them. I mean, there were a couple of the trees we got in, we were pushing 30 feet up just to kind of get above everything to where we could have some shots out. But so that I'd say that was probably one of the things that we kind of dealt with while we were there, was just finding a tree to get into where we wanted to be.
Yeah.
And then just writing off areas to where when we kind of scouted them, we're just like, ah, there's just no tree here to get into. But like you said, some of them areas where they're like a 400 acre bedding area anyways, without any previous intel or observation, you're just kind of playing the lottery. You're just going, okay, there's a heavy trail coming by here. I'll try here, and then just kind of do maybe an observation sit, and then just kind of keep moving if you have to.
But by then, by the time we had kind of found that, it was a little bit too late. It's always kind of at the end of the trip where you're just like, oh, yeah, this area is good. Maybe I'll stick it out. And I think some of the areas where I think kind of you just maybe just need to find that right, either that right kind of area, kind of like you have, or just a good funnel. And you may just have to park there because eventually something's going to come through there.
And as slow as it was, you know, some of the areas y'all hunted, I fully believe if that had been a good year, it would have been totally different. And you probably would have had some nice bucks come cruising by.
Yeah. Well, there was one area we were hunting that you had said that your brother's buddy had hunted a year or two prior, where he had seen a real big buck and just could never quite get in the right tree.
Yep. It was last year.
Right, to shoot him. And the really, that area, there was the first day we drove by there, there was like a truck parked in one of the parking areas. But after that, we never saw another truck parked there, period, on that side, driving in, driving out. The days that we hunted there, there was never any competition over there. And the funny part was the first day that we did go in there, we went in there at dark looking for a tree to get into. And we find one like right off the rip. I'm like, oh yeah, this is the tree. And then you look in there and there's like a double lock-ons that are already hung in that tree. And I'm like, oh, and then we ended up having to go down the line like another like 300 yards or 400 yards from that tree to find a tree that we could get into for to hunt there. And I was like, man, why did those lock-ons have to be in there? And no one, and never saw anybody in there hunting them. So I'm just assuming it was a local that had set that up there. But the funny part was when we drove by there that Saturday, there was still nobody over there. There was still nobody in that area. There were definitely deer over there because that was the area where we had seen the good buck in the field, the soybean field, and where we'd saw that 10-point and a few other bucks. I think that morning we had seen like three different bucks cross that kind of – well, before it was a food plot or something, and then it looked like this year they didn't do anything to it, so it had kind of returned to like CRP-looking stuff where it wasn't as maybe as high, but it still looked like the CRP stuff that you would see. But they were still crossing through that stuff to get to a more thicker bedding area that they had.
Yeah, it seemed like they were just really sticking to the bedding areas while we were up there. They just, like a lot of the deer I seen were pretty much in CRP. I caught a few deer just early in the morning cutting across the cornfield, going back to bed. You know, and most of the time when I seen that, it was does. I seen a couple of bucks cruise across, you know, and they just went out into that bedding area and lay down, and in the afternoons they just pop up out there.
Yeah.
You know, they were staying in cover for sure.
Well, the weird part was is when we went there and scouted and at the end of September, it was dry. Like, I think they had a drought or something before all that, because those creeks and stuff had no water in them. Like, you could walk the creeks, that creek that you were on. And the river really didn't have that much water. And then I think about a week before we left, they had like a couple of days like of just solid rainfall.
Yeah.
And there was way more water in those creeks
than there was before. And even the area, one of the trees that I went and hunted that I actually killed my buck last year out of, it's the one I was telling you about that I had the water come up over my boots trying to get in there on that first morning.
Right.
And the water for the previous 2 years hadn't been that high right there.
Right.
So they had definitely had a lot of rain, and the creeks were definitely up, and there was a lot of water on the ground. And a lot of the fields actually were being delayed of harvest, I believe, because of all the rain they had.
Yeah. You could look into the corn fields and soybean and just tell it was wet. Like, there were definitely areas where there was still water standing. It was muddy walking through them to get to where you wanted to go.
Yep.
So I mean, overall, it was a good trip. as out of state wise, that was the second time that I had hunted on public. The first time was last year in Iowa, which was like just a completely different scenario because there was literally nobody hunting that piece of public that we hunted, except for like a couple of out of state people that I saw the entire time that we were on it. I mean, I thought it was a good trip. I mean, I didn't see the buck that I necessarily wanted to see, but I still saw deer every time. And the only thing I probably wish I would have done different, but not knowing, is that I would have used that middle of the day time to go out and scout. We did do that one day. And we bumped quite a few deer scouting, but it was always in areas where there was nowhere you could hunt. Like there was no trees close by that you could get into. Like high stem count stuff where it was just so thick, like you were literally had zero shots, and even if you were on the ground, you would have had a problem.
And that was kind of normal of what I was seeing the deer in, you know, like right. Being in CRP fields, there was just nowhere to, I mean, there's no big trees out there. They're all just little bushes.
Right. I did a little bit of calling while we were there. I said the only really response we got was that one buck where he kind of responded to the grunt. Didn't do a ton, but did a little bit of calling. So maybe I just need to do a lot more. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I know some people that rattle whatever every 15 to 30 minutes hoping a buck. But I never saw enough cruising activity to think that it would work.
Yeah, and I did a little bit of grunting. I did some blind grunting, but I also grunted at some bucks that I could see, like at 7 point. There was a nice 8 point I seen four different days. I grunted at and just no response. I mean, I had no response from small bucks to the biggest buck I seen. No response to it at all.
Yeah, and the only, like I said, we did have a little buck that we saw one evening where he came out. I mean, a lot of the one of the things that I did kind of like is when we sat up in an area, I could kind of predict, okay, the deer are going to funnel through here. Like, we're definitely going to see a deer right there. And we did every sit, like, come through a certain area where we were at. But we had one small buck. He came through, and he hit a rub. Like, he was sat there for, like, 5 minutes just trying to trash this tree with what little antlers that he had. But that was it. There were fresh scrapes on the ground. It looked like fresh scrapes that had either popped up or whatnot. Never saw anything checking the, cause there was a couple of areas where we were in. Heck, the one tree we were in where we were near you, there was a scrape from that tree. It was this big sycamore tree, where they had, there was a scrape, and there was another scrape probably 100 yards to the east of it, I think east, but never saw anything like trying to check a scrape or make a scrape or anything like that.
I seen a little bit of rubbing action inside of the bedding areas. The two biggest bucks I seen actually, one of them being at 7 point, the other one being at 8. I seen both of them rubbing trees like when. So both of them deer, like the 7 point when I first seen him, he was with a doe, and he would walk around behind her, and if there was a little bitty tree or bush or something, he would put his antlers in it, and he would, you know, rub on stuff and follow that doe around. And the same with that 8 point that I seen, he would do the same thing. He'd go over there and rub a tree or something and just be following that doe around.
Right. Yeah, well, actually, something to think about. Probably the biggest buck I did see was that day that we were walking out all together on that last day.
Oh,
there was a buck that crossed it. You and Brandon didn't see it, and I was just happened to look up, and a buck came out of the CRP and crossed right in front of us near this oak tree. He was actually probably the biggest buck I saw during the whole trip. Of course, walking out, if I'd have had my bow ready or something, I mean, he was only probably 40, 50 yards from us.
And I think we're chit-chatting.
Yeah, we were just chit-chatting, walking out, and you were showing us, oh, yeah, my brother's hunted that tree, his friends hunted that tree, killed a buck right here, late season type deal. when we were walking out, so we really weren't paying that much attention walking out. And it was getting hot. I still had all my clothes on, so I really wasn't paying as much attention as I probably should have. But yeah, I had a good experience. And like I say, to go in there and to see deer every time, I was happy with that. Like, to get in an area to see deer, I know how, I mean, it's still hunting. So there's always that chance where you might not see a deer or anything like that. I've had that happen during the rut, before, in the Midwest. But it was, the only thing that, I mean, and Brandon and I kind of talked a little bit, we were just hoping to see more rutting activity out of the trip. We were kind of hoping to see more like chasing going on, or just have one of those days kind of like where you had one of the years where you watched a buck fend off like six or seven other bucks during the day.
That was like the first day of the first year.
Yeah. Something like that. But I don't think it was in the cards for this trip. I think we might have just been a touch early.
Yeah, it was just, and I think it could have had a lot to do with the drought plus not having hardly any cold weather.
Right.
Beforehand.
Yeah.
It's just like the trees were behind, the vegetation was behind, the crop fields were behind, and so was the deer.
Yeah.
It's like everything was behind. Everything was lagging behind this year.
Right. For sure. So, but after we left, you ended up having some success on the trip because you called a major audible at the end because you were, I mean, basically that was going to be, I think, your last hunt.
Or
you had planned it to be your last hunt, which worked out. So why don't you kind of go over that?
Well, I guess I'd go back and I think the Wednesday, which would have been my third day there, we had the coldest day of the trip and everything was iced over. I remember leaving like my tether and stuff in the tree, and it had like my stuff had ice on it basically. And anyways, that day I think I ended up seeing like 19 deer, and I ended up seeing a really nice 8-point, and he was the biggest buck that I had seen the whole trip, and he ended up being the biggest buck I seen the whole trip that I was there. But I watched his buck, and I watched him out in his big bedding area. I seen him that morning, seen him that afternoon, the next day. I ended up seeing him. So basically, I ended up seeing that deer Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday for 3 days in a row out there in that bedding area. And I've hunted the south side and the north side of that bedding area. And when I seen him, I noticed that he would always show up in a certain little, I would say a little 1-acre area in the mornings and afternoons when I seen him. Right. He would always end up coming or just appearing or just being in this one little spot. And I caught myself taking pictures of this area from like 300-400 yards away. So I took my cell phone out, and I started taking pictures. I zoomed in and took pictures. I put my binoculars up and actually took pictures of this buck standing out there. And then I also done the same thing from the other side of this big CRP / bedding area that was in total about 400 acres. I took pictures from the opposite side, you know, looking at it from a different direction. And so that Saturday we went and hunted, which was y'all's last day. We had the duck hunters come in, and I mean, it just sounded like they was just tearing the woods down. There was wood popping, just all kinds of stuff. They were talking. It sounded like one of them was mad at the other. It was just, they just made so much racket. I just remember us texting back and forth, like, what in the world? There's no way these guys are deer hunting making this much noise.
Right.
And so, you know, coming that Saturday, I ended up seeing zero deer out in that bedding area. You know, I had that buck chasing a doe, come running down the creek under me, and had a doe cross the creek. And, you know, I believe we were talking about it on the way out, and or maybe when we got to the parking lot. You know, I told you that I'm probably going to end up going up in this bend there in the CRP field after this deer.
Right.
Yeah, I felt like I was not going to have a chance at him coming out because he just stayed in there. You know, and I apparently that Saturday morning, the people, duck hunters ran him out. You know, I took Saturday afternoon off because I was wore out. I had about an hour and 10-minute drive one way. So I was driving like 2 hours and 20 minutes a day. Plus waking up and getting to my parking area before everybody, being the first one there and the last one to leave. And I was just dog tired, and I took the day off, spent the day with my brother and my nephew and just relax. So I did that, and, you know, I've been sitting there thinking about that deer and just how to go after him. And so I've been waiting on them farmers as well to cut that field, and they were just, I don't know, they were just taking their time, and it didn't seem like they really got out there until about 11 o'clock. So that Sunday morning, the day after y'all left, I decided I'm just going to sit on the edge of this ag field. I've been hunting the other side for several days in a row. I'm going back to the ag field side, the south side. My wind's going to be blowing out into this bedding area. I knew that. But I also knew first thing that morning my thermals would actually be pulling back into the ag field because the wind was very predictable in thermals. The thermals always pulled to the south first hour, hour and a half. And it was sometime around 8:30, you know, the dominant wind for that day would take over.
Right.
And so I basically got in a tree that was to a far corner of this bedding area that would only be blowing in one section closer to where them duck hunters had been hunting. And knowing if I seen them deer, they would be further over to my west. You know, they'd be out of my wind tunnel, mm-hmm. Per se. And so I got in that tree because I could also see out in there a whole lot better. And I just felt like in the morning I'd have more luck catching the deer cruise back across his ag field or coming into ag field and whatnot. But so I'm sitting there, and sun comes up. The sun starts hitting the CRP, and as usual about the time I start seeing deer start popping up in it. And just so happened, the first deer I seen was that big 8-point. So I'm like, there he is. And he's with a doe, and there's another small 8-point out there. And a small 8-point trying to get to this doe, and his bigger 8-points is steadily running him off. You know, he would kind of start walking sideways at him, and that little buck would take off running. And then he would walk back to that doe, and that little buck would walk back over there. And this happened 3 or 4 times. And then finally that buck, he took off chasing the smaller buck. And it finally decided, okay, I'm done messing with him. And so I watched this buck and this doe cruise in. They ended up coming up behind me, getting very close to my wind. And I watched them bed down. So I took pictures of the area. I dropped pins of where they bedded. This buck also appeared in the same spot he's been appearing every time I see him at first daylight and at last light in the afternoon. So I'd take pictures of where they went to, where they are now, back to the area he appeared in, more pictures. And I said, all right, this is it. I'm going after this deer right now. So I waited to make sure they stayed bedded down for about 30 minutes, and I eased out of this tree. I would say it was probably around 9 o'clock I got down, and I had a right at close to a mile walk back to the truck. Went back to the truck, shed all my gear, changed different clothes. Had a snack, grabbed me a water bottle and grabbed my bow, and I just took off because I had about a mile and a quarter walk to get around this big bend area to the downwind side. Knowing that the wind that day was supposed to pick up to like 14 miles per hour, and I figured, well, by the time I get over there, I know the wind's going to be picked up. It seems like 10, 11 o'clock, the wind's just ripping. So I make it back there, I'd say around 10 o'clock, and the wind's perfect. It's coming out of the south, and I started looking at my map on my hunt stand and just kind of getting a game plan of how I'm getting in here. So there's like some random cedar trees out there. So I was like, okay, I'm going to that cedar tree for right now. So I eased out there. I ended up finding a really good deer trail, and I was able to walk that deer trail. And I got in there to a cedar tree, and I pulled my hunt stand back up, and I look at it. And I was like, I need to go to this next cedar tree. And I go to it. And basically, this trail is taking me right where I want to go, and it is just beat down to the dirt. I'm like, So I get in this area, and there's like these two cedar trees on either side of me, and I'm looking at my map, and I'm like, I believe I'm in the right area where this deer keeps appearing. So that's when all them pictures that I had been taking from both sides come into play. I was able to scroll through them pictures and start matching up trees and them cedar trees and bushes and just small things out there to figure out exactly where I needed to be. You know, when I first started headed in there, I was actually thinking about going exactly where that buck and doe had bedded in, trying to, because there was a ditch that ran up behind them. And I was thinking about getting that ditch and it was going to put me within like 40 yards of them and trying to get right in there up on them and wait for them to get up. But as I got out there into it, Chase, I just got the feeling, I was like, look, I seen this deer here. Every time I see him in the morning, afternoon, he always appears right here. So something told me, I was like, this is the area I need to be in. I just need to stay right here. And I get in there, I put all them pictures together, and I was like, okay, I think I'm pretty sure I'm in the right area. And I find this, there was like little, it looked like little hickory, or not hickory, but red oak trees out there that were maybe like 6 to 8 foot tall and approximately 2 to 3 foot in diameter with just little bitty limbs and leaves on them. And there would be like little rows of them. There, you know, there may be like 4 or 5 in a row that are spaced out every 6 to 8 foot apart. So I kind of got in between two of them trees like that and got in the shade because the sun was up. It then got hot. It was, I don't remember how hot it was that day, but it was pretty warm. And I remember getting in between them trees and also just kind of a going back a little bit, you know, like we had talked about earlier. I was already thinking about going home on Monday because of how hot it was and the deer movement was just so slow. So that was another factor going in, just going in after this deer right here, right now. Because I knew it was going to be hot. But anyways, I get in between them trees. I basically just clear out an area and sit down. And by the time I get set down, I don't, 10:45 or so. And I end up just sitting in this one spot for hours. And I would say around 3:30, you know, I was sitting there just scrolling, looking at pictures, and I would get up every once in a while. I tried to sit on my knees. And on my knees, my head was even with the top of the CRP. You know, this stuff is tall. It's like close to 4 foot tall, your CRP out there. Like when you've seen a deer, most of the time, all you, like on a buck, all you would see is their like head in the rack. And on a doe, you may see their ears. And sometimes you wouldn't even see that. You would just see a glimpse here or there. So there was times I stood up and looked, but the wind was just ripping. And like we had talked about previously, it had been just so dead in the middle of the day. And I got to looking at these pictures and looking at everything around me. And I was like, I need to move just a little. So I moved up like probably 15 yards to this tree that was kind of like three trees in front of me. And I got right there and I was like, oh, I feel better. And then as it got later, I was just like, they're just hitting enough cover on this tree. And there was like this tree to my left. It was like perfect. I mean, like perfect. It was this little like red oak tree and it had leaves from top to bottom and it was only about 7 foot tall and it wasn't real wide. And then something just kept urging me, you need to move, you need to move. And I didn't do it for a while. And I would say about 4 o'clock, I was like, I moved over there. Made another little spot. So this is the third time I moved. And about, I think it was around 4:30, I ended up standing up and getting on the shaded side of this tree. And I was looking back the way that I had last seen this buck and doe bedded. And I was glassing and I was trying to pick out exactly where they were over there. And I was trying to pay close attention, which I was doing this the whole time. But I really started doing it this last part of the day because the deer just started appearing usually around 5 o'clock, which I think the sunset was around 5:10 that day.
Uh-huh.
Right around that sunset is when the deer usually appear. So I'm up at like 4:30, just glassing, looking, standing on the shaded side of this tree, looking back down towards the ag fields. And I don't see anything. I'm just sitting there. There's nothing. But, you know, I was confident. I was like, I'm in a good spot. 90% of the deer I see come through right here or they appear right here or something about this spot, which the spot was the only spot out there that had like these two like ditches that run through it. And there was like a little knoll in between them. And that's basically where I was. So it was basically, it was a diversity within that bedding cover. And that's what they were using. So anyways, I'm sitting there and the sun finally sets about 5:10. And I hadn't been able to look back to my east because the sun was just blinding me. I mean, it was bright, bright, bright. And as soon as the sun set and I was able to look back to my east, I look over and about 60 or 70 yards from me is this buck standing there. And all I can see is his tines. I can't see his main beam. All I can see is his tines sticking up. And I know it's this deer, and I'm like, oh, my God, how did he get over here? And he's supposed to be over here to my west, 150 yards, and he's 60 yards here to my east. You know, so I'm like just thrown off. I'm like, holy cow. So I grab my bow, and I've already been ranging trees and what I think are trails in different spots. That way I'd be ready. And this deer is like slowly working to me. And I'm just the whole time, I'm just praying to God, just please let him come by me. Just let him walk towards me, walk to my area. Just let him come by here. You know, I was just praying. And slowly, I mean, just so slowly, this buck would ease my way and he'd stop. And he'd be looking back down towards the ag fields and staring. Not one time did he ever look my way. And he's just slowly working my way just on the other side of this ditch from me. And he's getting closer and closer. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's going to happen. There was one time I thought he was going to go away. And he didn't. He just kept working my way. And this time I'm like, it's about to happen. I'm about to get a shot at this deer 20 yards broadside. And he doesn't have a clue I'm here. He's looking the other way. And all of a sudden, he just starts like jumping just straight up and down through this CRP. you know, still about to come out right in front of me. So I'm like, crap, I got to hurry up and draw back. He's about to be right here in the open. So I draw back, and I get draw back, and he stops. And he's just looking around. You know, he's still not looking my way. He's looking a different way. And I'm at full draw, and this goes on for about 15 seconds, and I hear some deer running behind me. I just hear hoofs and jumping and running going on behind me, like right behind me. And about that time, this deer starts angling my way and starts jumping through the CRP, like almost coming at me. And like at first, he's coming right at me. And I had to turn and get my bow around the other side of this tree, my whole body and everything, while he is coming at me. And then he turns and starts going parallel with me. And he never sees me. It was the craziest thing ever. And just this little tree between us. And he was so comfortable where he was. And there was a doe up there. I could kind of see her at the corner of my eye. And I'm steadily moving. And I'm pretty sure she is staring at me. And this buck, he gets past the tree. He kind of gets just a little past me. And I'm still at full draw. And I'm like, Matt, trying to stop him. He's just a walking, won't stop. So I'm getting to where I can, basically where I can shoot him when he gets into my sight glass. I can, you know, shoot him and hit him right there in the vital V. And about that time he gets in there, he's like walking into my crosshairs and getting right there where I think he's supposed to be. I go to shoot and he stops about the time I shoot. And ended up shooting the deer in the neck. And he like stopped and like turned towards me just a little bit. And I shot him basically in the neck. I basically got lucky. I mean, really. But this deer ended up being like 7 to 8 yards. Was looking dead. He was looking dead at me when I shot. I guess he finally heard me.
Right.
Or seen that doe looking at me or something. But I ended up shooting this deer. I mean, within 8 yards of me. Like, I've never it happened like that. I mean, just so fast. And after I shot him, the deer runs off and he's just standing there with his back to me. So I'm like, well, I'm ranging over there. And I was like, that tree right there is 60 yards and I shoot 60 yards all the time. So I'm like, he's 70 yards. So I'm like, well, I'm not exactly sure about my shot, so I went to shoot him again and ended up putting him right where I, you know, needed to for 70 yards and shot, and I heard a pow, and that deer just jumps up. He runs. He makes a small loop, and I see him. I'm looking through my binoculars, and this deer's, like, looking back my way. All I can see is his antlers, and I can just tell he's looking back my way, and this small buck comes up behind him. The one that he had been chasing off that morning, come up behind him and like smelled him, and it like startled him. That little buck like just jumped back, like just startled. And that buck, he started like hobbling off, and I seen him go behind a tree and he disappeared from my angle, which apparently that wasn't the case after I, you know, went back to look for him. But I went and looked for my arrow, and the craziest thing is I ended up finding my arrow 6 feet away from the place I had just moved from. The last little high that I made, and I was like, I need to be in that bushier tree just 5 yards over.
Yep.
He ended up being like 6 foot from where I had just moved. And there's probably no way I would have shot him if I'd been right there.
Yeah.
So it was like so crazy how it worked. I just had this urgent feeling, like just something pushing me to, hey, you need to move, just move right over there. You just need to be right there. It's where you need to be. And I don't know exactly what that was, but it paid off for sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically just eased out of there and just had to let that buck sit overnight because, you know, I wasn't so sure about the shot. Which I ended up talking to a lot of guys on our Patreon group, which was really awesome. And one of the guys, you know, he does a lot of blood tracking with his dog, and I was asking him all kinds of questions, and he was tons of help along with a lot of other people on there. And they were kind of giving me their thoughts and this and that, and I try to find somebody with a dog to go out there and help me that next morning just to make sure. I just didn't want to lose a really nice buck and experience like that. But my brother come out there with me the next day, and we ended up going right to the arrow. And there was, you know, which I knew before I left, my arrow had good blood on the fletchings. And there was good blood at the shot site. We ended up tracking blood, and I did end up shooting that buck twice. The second one wasn't a fatal shot, but it slowed him down because it basically busted all his knuckles on his back legs. But anyways, that deer, I ended up shooting him right in the throat, cut his windpipe, and hit him in the spine, and it come out the other side of his neck, which I was shooting a fixed blade broadhead. And it did him in. He only went a total, following his blood trail from where I shot him to where he died, a total of 200 yards.
Okay.
And everywhere he stopped at, there was blood. Everywhere. I mean, it looked like a murder. It looked like a murder scene.
Right.
And, I mean, we ended up finding the deer pretty quickly. It took us about 45 minutes to track the deer, going super slow, just being real cautious. But, yeah, but we were walking down a trail, and I'm following the blood. I'll never forget my brother being like, "Hey, there's your deer right there." And I'm like, What? Where? And he's like, "Come here." And I back up, and there's like this little trail, faint trail that winds off to the right. And look over, there's a little tree. And I seen white. When I seen that white, I flipped out. All the emotion from all night, talking to people and just being sick, making a bad shot at a deer that close. Man, it just all went out the window. I was so excited. I was like jumping around out in this field, high-fiving, just ecstatic. I mean, it was one of the best feelings.
Oh, yeah.
Just to find a deer like after having that kind of encounter, and just the whole story of that whole trip, 7 days of, you know, trying to get it done. And it was just awesome to actually get him and be able to get him out. And, you know, I had about a mile and a half drag to get him out of there and back to the truck.
Right. Were you able to use your buggy, your little cart?
Yes, so after we drug him out of the CRP, we were able to put him on that cart and drag him the last like mile and a quarter on the cart, which still was not fun.
No.
I mean, even with both of it, that deer, I mean, I ended up having to, I was down in my underwear and just a shirt on. Had all my stuff piled up on that deer. I mean, it was hot. It was hot.
Right.
We ended up, because that morning, I think the temps were only like 55 for the low. But we ended up getting him out of there. It took us, I don't know, but I don't remember how long it took us to get him out of there. But it took a good little while, and I was good and tired by the time I got him out.
Yeah. Yep, I bet you. Well, you were still riding high off of the kill,
oh,
I'm sure.
Yeah.
So it probably didn't feel as bad as it actually was.
Yeah, and that was actually the first deer I've ever killed off the ground with a bow and arrow.
Okay.
And, you know, listening to a lot of different people talk about ground hunting, I mean, Walter talks about ground hunting all the time. You know, and I've always just grown up of being an elevated hunter. That's just how I grew up. You had to get in the stand. You had to be up in the air, off the ground, and that's the way I really like to hunt. That's where I'm comfortable. That's just mainly what I know. So I really went out of my comfort zone and my element getting out there on the ground and trying to hunt this deer with a bow and arrow that I've really never had any success. And I've actually done very little, but I think it helped, you know, all the observation that I did of this deer, marking where I seen him and taking pictures of it, really paid off when I got out there, because that stuff looks totally different once you're out there in it. And I know for a fact, if I wouldn't have had those pictures, I would have never put myself in the right position to even have a chance to kill that deer.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely a good call. I may have been something I would have thought about if I was doing the same thing, to where, because like I said, once you get in and it probably all kind of looks the same, I'm sure, once you get in there.
I spent hours looking at pictures and looking at stuff out there trying to make sure I was in the right spot.
Yeah, unless you, I mean, and maybe just, I know Onyx and the other, some of the other ones, Hunt Stand, where you got the line feature where you can kind of guess, all right, that's how far it would be in or whatever. You can kind of do those things and maybe mark it, but still different. And just taking the pictures where you can go, okay, yeah, that's that tree. That's where I'm at. I'm at those little clump of trees right there from the picture. Probably, like you said, made all the difference once you got in there. And it's a good tip for somebody else or somebody listening to this. Like, hey, if you encounter something like this, that's a great way to go about it. Take as many pictures as you can, and because I mean, it paid off for you being able to get tucked in there. Although it was funny how you kind of mentioned, like, the deer appeared from an area where you didn't think he might appear from. So who knows? He could have been possibly moving around then in that CRP, and you just didn't see him.
Yeah, he could have, or when I got out of that tree, they may have got up and moved still, but it was like 9 o'clock when I got down.
Yeah, that's
so they could have easily moved again. But my thought was, after I got in there, because that stuff, there was nothing quiet about it. Luckily, I had that 14 mile per hour wind, and it was just something told me I just need to stay right here. You know, I've been seeing that deer. He always shows up and ends up right here. Every time I see him,
yeah,
he either shows up in that spot or he ends up in that spot. So that ultimately was, you know, kind of my thinking. Once I got in there and seen what I was in, and all, I was like, you know, I just need to stick right here, because if I go to where I last seen him and he's not there, then I'm just a SOL. I done blew out all these other deer, because I kind of went in. I went straight into the wind. I did not do any left or right walking. I kind of pretty much made a beeline into that area.
Right.
Because just to the left and just to the right of that area, a lot of these deer were bedded that I was seeing, and I was trying not to run all them deer out as well and maybe spook that buck that was in there with that doe. So when I went in there, I tried to get right where I wanted to get on the downwind side and go straight into it.
Yeah.
Straight into the wind, straight to where I wanted to be.
Well, I'm sure it sounded like that trail you found that you followed in there definitely helped. I'm sure it helped with your noise and everything.
Yeah, because I probably made it in there probably 100, or I'd say halfway in there before I found that trail.
Okay.
And it was not quiet. And once I found that trail, I was like, man, this trail is leading me right where I want to go. So I just kind of stayed on it and then just hopped right off that trail and got in that little tree line. I was like, well, he may come cruising right out of this trail, because this is the trail I seen him on this morning. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Yep. Well, sounds like it was a hunt where you did what you had to. That was the biggest buck you saw the entire trip, right?
Yep, biggest one, and somehow brought him back to Alabama with me. I do not know. You know, Missouri's been good to me. That place has been really good. I mean, I've been going for 3 years, and that'd be the second buck I brought home, and should have brought home one the first year as well.
Yeah.
I just kind of made a bad shot or, you know, on a really big deer. And just ever since then, I have put so much work into my bow setup and spending 3 to 4 times as much time shooting my bow as I had previously. Ever since that happened, I was so sick, so frustrated and tore up about it that, you know, I've been working on my own bow. completely changed my arrow set out. Went from a mechanical to a fixed blade just because of the deer there. And mature deer don't give you the shot you want most of the time. You're going to have to take a shot that you might, you know, you might be playing with bones. And I went with basically like a plan B, something that's heavier. If I do encounter bone, I want to be able to break it, still be able to kill the deer.
Yeah.
You know, because we're not always the best shot and are the best in those moments either. So we need all the help we can.
Well, yeah, and that, and just weird things happen. Like, you're expecting that bug to keep moving. I mean, you were aiming where you were aiming because you were expecting him to walk into your arrow, and he stops on a dime when you release the arrow.
Yeah, he stopped. He stopped and like turned towards me a little bit. It was kind of weird what he did because he was moving real fast.
Right.
You know, if he wouldn't have been moving fast, I could have just aimed right where I wanted because he was so close. But that's the thing about bow hunting. You just have just the experience, and you have to have them failures to, you know, to really know what to do, and just anything can happen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a couple of good points from this hunt to definitely take away is if you're observing something that's happening over and over again, I mean, it's time to make a move. It's time to think outside the box. Which you did, you're like, hey, I've never killed anything from the ground, hadn't had any real success, hadn't tried it much, but I'm going to have to give it a go on this hunt if I want to be successful.
Yep, and I'm listening to different podcasts, some of it being y'all's and different things Walt's talked about. And last year, Walt killed a few deer off the ground.
Yeah.
And just people talking about, you know, sometimes you don't have a place you can set up and hunt in, and you're going to have to hunt on the ground. And I had to put in my mind that this year I was going to hunt on the ground some this year, and I was going to try to make myself a better, just rounded hunter. And just instead of just thinking I always had to be elevated, I was going to get in some of these spots. I'm like, man, I wish I could hunt, but there's not a tree in here. And just I'm going to get on the ground and hunt. And it just so happened that this situation arrived, and I just – you know, from listening to different people and watching different people being successful at it, and then just all the observing and pictures, it was time for me to do it. Yeah. I mean, that was the only thing that I hadn't done. And if I knew if I was going to kill a buck or kill that buck, I had to get out there with him. I basically got in his bedroom and sat there for 7 hours and waited him out.
Yeah. Yeah, you did. And I mean,
and it was the first deer I seen, and basically the only deer I seen.
And it was calculated. I mean, you up and to that point, you were thinking about leaving. So you're not doing any harm blowing that bed nary up,
right,
for the remainder of the trip, because that was pretty much it. So
yep, that was the thought process. I'm like, well, kind of last hurrah, I'm just going to go and get right up there with him.
Yeah.
And kind of. I hope he comes back through like he's been doing.
And you can tell that, I mean, from what you were talking about, is he felt comfortable in there. Like, it must have never have crossed his mind that there would be a hunter waiting on the ground for him at eight yards.
Chase, he did not know what happened. Right. I shot this deer. He still didn't know what happened. I shot him again. He still doesn't know what happened because – he doesn't run 20, 30 yards, and he's just looking back like, what is going on?
Right.
He's just standing there looking back my direction, not having a clue what in the world is going on.
Yeah.
He's just like, what happened? And I basically ran him off of his hot doe. He's just standing there. You can tell he don't want to leave. He's just standing there looking back my direction.
Right.
And, you know, we ended up finding that deer probably 80 yards from where I last seen him.
Yeah.
He didn't go much further and then died.
No, nope. Yeah, didn't. And you said he scored 127, right?
Yeah. When I scored him, he was 127 and 2/8.
Okay. You know? Yeah, and you finally got a entry into the bow hunting league.
Yep. Yeah, finally got us a deer in there.
Yeah, exactly. Finally got us a deer in there.
I'm hoping it's just one of a few.
Yeah. Well, you still got your season in Alabama still full ahead of you.
Yep, and getting to the better part of it finally.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, good deal, man. Well, I was texting back and forth. I mean, you had kind of told me the plan, and I was like, all right, he's committed. He's going to do it.
Yeah. I remember telling you that.
Me and Brandon, we were kind of like on the home stretch of our ride back home at that point. Cause we had left that afternoon and we drove about 8 hours and stayed in a hotel and got some sleep. And then we're making the rest of the trip back. And I remembered when you were texting me, we were like, I got him.
I remember calling you when I was walking out.
Yeah. And I called Brandon. I was like, hey, Brandon, you ain't going to believe this, but I was like, he got an arrow in him. We don't know what the rest of the story is yet, but he says he shot him at like 8 yards or something.
I was pumped up just
from the ground.
I was just pumped up just from that experience alone, 8 yards on a mature buck, and you're standing right there pretty much eye to eye with him.
Yeah.
Wow, that is just something else.
Yeah, for sure. I would have had Brandon on here with us too, but I mean, him and I hunted together the entire time. Like everything we scouted, we hunted. I mean, we were in the same tree the entire trip. So it wasn't like he had any like different experiences than I did for the trip. Like I said, we came with a couple of conclusions of maybe we probably should have maybe stuck it out more in an area that we didn't really get the, because this was his first trip out to the Midwest, like we discussed prior on the other podcast, just trying to kind of get that whole like rut experience that you find in the Midwest. And I really, honestly, on all the trips I've had, I really haven't. Iowa was probably the best, I would say. But even Kansas, Illinois, I really can't say that I've had just like a crazy rut hunt experience in the Midwest. So I'm still searching for it.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't that way when we were there. It just wasn't happening.
Yeah. Yep. That's just the way it's going to be sometimes.
That seemed to be the story from everybody we talked to that was in that same area.
Yeah. Even the locals were saying that just wasn't quite right yet. Man, well, I appreciate you coming back on the podcast. I know all the Patreon members were rooting for you and happy for you whenever you finally laid hands on that deer.
So that was a cool experience for them too, because I got to see the emotional side from the standpoint of me getting him close to this deer and shooting him and just being ecstatic just about that. And then
the
part of the shot and all of us talking back and forth, and then me actually finding the deer. So that was cool for, you know, the whole Patreon, the Marco Polo group and all.
Yeah. 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 I was following along with that. It really was cool to see. And, I know all of those guys that are constantly on there were following along, and, we're super excited for you.
Yeah. It was awesome. It's definitely a hunt I'll never forget, and I will never rule out going after one again on the ground.
Yeah, well, I think I'm going to, with that being said, I'm going to wrap this up. I appreciate you coming on. Appreciate you sharing that experience with everybody, and I hope the discussion we had and the experience Brett had on this hunt will inspire you to get outside and enjoy the great outdoors.